things in this book. Absolutely glorious things. And do pray for me as I prepare week by week that I can somehow bring out just something of the glory that's contained in these words. So please be impressed with me week by week. Today, however, I'm going to look at these verses from verse 13 through to 14 as I've put up there, and we're continuing our series, Keeping Up with the Colossians. There's a little pun for those who don't know, Keeping Up with the Kardashians. We have a better model, a better example to follow, with all due respect to the Kardashian family. Keeping up with Colossians, there are three things I want to bring out. The implications of keeping up with the Colossians, of living the Christian life in some way, shape or form in a similar vein to the way that the Colossians lived out their Christian lives. Firstly, that it means bearing fruit. Bearing fruit. The Colossians bore fruit, the gospel brought fruit amongst them, and Christians everywhere are called to bear fruit. First thing. Secondly to that, that bearing fruit once at one point, at some past event, perhaps a happy moment, is not enough. We have to keep bearing fruit in all circumstances. Our fruit needs to mature and continue to grow. And that's normal. And that's what we see here in this book as well. Continually growing fruit in all the circumstances of life. And then finally, and this is the nub of it, because if we're going to bear fruit, gospel fruit, and we're going to bear fruit in all seasons and increasing fruit, we are going to need help. We're going to need help. So we have to be humble about these things. There's no room for pride in this house. We've got to be humble and accept the help that we need. So those are my three main points in looking from verse 3 to 14. Thank you for leading and thank you for praying for me and for our congregation this morning. Let's begin then as we look through these glorious things. So what does faith, hope and love look like is the question I started with. Because in the reading, whether you picked up on it or not, it mentions faith, it mentions hope, it mentions love. And some of you perhaps will know the expression faith, hope and love, that famous term, which was coined by the same writer who wrote this letter, the Apostle Paul. He coined that phrase in his letter to the Corinthian church. Now, the problem with the Corinthian church is there wasn't much faith, there wasn't much hope, and there wasn't much love. And that's why he speaks to them about it, the importance of these three things, especially love. Especially love. The most important thing of all. And these themes come up again in this letter that he writes to the Colossians. But the difference here is what's clear as you read this letter, faith, hope and love are present in the church. So here's a church where it wasn't present. Here's a church where it is present. Faith, hope and love being present in the church is the norm. In Corinth, that was abnormal and needed to be dealt with. It was a problem that needed to be addressed. But what does it look like? How do we lay hold of these things? Faith, hope and love in the church. This normal situation. How can we pursue it, lay hold of it and appreciate these things? So I thought what I often do when I put together, just in the middle of the week, I start to prepare, I read the passage and I think, right, by Tuesday, partly because the band are going to prepare some songs for on Wednesday evening, I try to put an advert together which sort of says, roughly speaking, what I'm going to be looking at on the Sunday so that songs can be chosen and so on. And you can be invited. You can always copy and paste these invites to your friends and so on. I was looking for an image. So I went to Google Images and I put in faith, hope and love. And I Googled it into the Google search bar on the images thing and clicked search. And up came, to my surprise, a very wide range of tattoos. I wasn't expecting that. Loads of them. Loads of different tattoo designs. Some of them had the love bit expressed in a heart, the faith bit expressed in a cross, the hope bit expressed in an anchor. Some of them, there was a kind of clever little thing that you kind of had a cross, then blend into a kind of like a squiggly thing, which I think was hope, you know, liveliness, and then a heart at the end. And people had it in Gothic text. They had it behind their ears. They had it on their ankles. They had it down their thighs. They had it under their arms. People had it all the way down their arms. Faith, hope, and love. Amazing, amazing. Really popular, really popular. So there you know. There we go. Should we go home now? I wonder what the Apostle Paul, when he coined the phrase, when he wrote to the Corinthians, faith, hope, and love, and then putting up these points again in Colossians, what would he make of a wander around 21st century internet and discover the plethora of tattoos that he has inadvertently inspired? Would he be like Paul when he went to Athens, as we were hearing last week when Phil shared with us, walking around a city that was literally sinking under idols? Would it have made him groan? Is that what has come from my words? Tattoos on the surface. What faith, hope, and love isn't the business of the surface of our lives. Faith, hope, and love is at the very heart and core of our lives. Faith, hope, and love is about your heart. And I wonder whether he would have kind of thought, well, it's better than nothing. But the aim is to cultivate these things in our hearts. Faith, hope, and love, these three things. And as we read down in this passage, we can see from verse 3, Paul, when he's hearing about this church in Colossae, he is a happy man, isn't he? He's a happy man. Look at it there in verse 3. Every time he prays about these people, it just produces a spontaneous thankfulness. He is thrilled with the news that he hears about these Christians down there in Colossae. Why? Why is he so thrilled? Because of their reputation. And I don't mean that in a, you know, I think it's in the beginning of Book of Revelations, you have a reputation that you are alive, but in fact you are dead. I'm not talking about a superficial reputation. I'm talking about he's heard from this man Epaphras, who is the minister of that church and is presently being arrested and is with him in Rome. Here's the man who knows better than anybody whether this church really has faith or not. He's heard from him that these people have got faith. And it thrills him to know that these people have got faith in God. And not only have they got faith, as we read on in verse 4, they have love. There's love in the church. Love for each other. Love for the saints. In verse 4. And he is so thankful to know there's a church where people love each other. And they love God. They trust God. And finally there in verse 5, these people, their view of the future, when they look ahead at the days to come, it is characterized by hope. These are not a dismal and despairing people. These are not a kind of dark cloud on the horizon. These are people with a bright hope. And he's so thankful, isn't he, to know that there's a church like this in Colossae. It's good news, isn't it? It's good news, and he thanks God. Three great graces: faith, hope, and love, all of which are alive and well in the church at Colossae. Go back to our tattooing community for a moment and the tattoos of faith, hope, and love. And I wonder whether the faith, hope, and love that they're referring to, now I'm not in a position to ultimately judge, but whether the faith, hope, and love that they're referring to is not the same faith, hope, and love that's been referred to by the apostle. I'm not sure whether the faith that is being spoken about is a faith in God, but maybe a more kind of, you know, a commitment to being a person of integrity or something of that nature. Whether the love that's referred to in that is more about friends and family and a commitment to be a good part of that community. Whether it, rather than this, which is love for the saints specifically, for those who God has called and set apart for his plan and purpose, the church. And I don't know whether the hope they're talking about is some sort of more optimistic temperament and seeing the best in everything and a positive outlook on things, a kind of a people, somebody who doesn't bring you down, rather than here, somebody whose their hope is invested, very specifically, isn't it? It's entrusted for them in heaven. Their hope is in heaven. Very specific, isn't it? And I don't know when they talk about faith, hope, and love, the Lord knows, but those are the things that they're referencing. But I know this. This much I do know. As far as Colossae goes, the faith, the hope, the love, as we see in verse 5, have been produced at the end of that verse there because of the hope laid up for you in heaven. Of this you have heard before in the words of truth, the gospel. Where's the faith coming from? Why have they got faith in God? Because they have heard the good news. Why do they love those who God has shown his love to? Because of the good news. Why have they got a hope? It's because of the good news. The gospel is the soil in which their tree as a church has been planted. And these fruits that are on the tree are being produced as a consequence of the ground, the nutrients that are in the ground, the gospel ground. The fruits of gospel fruits, aren't they? Faith, hope, and love. Gospel fruits. The word gospel, I know, can be used as jargon, and not everybody perhaps understands the terms. I don't know. I don't want to spend too long on this, but I think looking around the room, most of us are familiar with these things. But the death of Jesus, the crucifixion of Jesus, has in these people's hearts and minds established an unshakable confidence in God and has produced this love for their fellow Christians and this expectation about the future. Jesus' death, his burial, and Jesus' raising from the dead. These three things inspire this response in their hearts, because they know that Jesus is God's Son who's come for no other purpose but to save, to redeem, to capture the lost and to bring them back to God, and to demonstrate God so loved the world that he gave his one and only Son, that whoever believed in him should not perish but have everlasting life. Great and glorious things are contained in the gospel, the love of God. And so their faith, if they had any doubts about God, have been dispelled by the gospel. Their reservations about people around them have been dispelled. If God loved them, who am I not to do so? Their concerns about their own personal futures and the futures of their communities and families be dispelled because of the gospel. They have a hope. And that is the nature and the character of this church. And what's clear as we go into verse 6 is we can see that these characteristics were not unique to the church in Colossae. This was not Colossian faith, hope, and love. This was the general, ordinary faith, hope, and love being found in every church where the gospel was being planted. This was normal. It's everywhere. As the gospel is bearing fruit, so these things are abounding everywhere. This fruit is being produced. Two things about fruit. One is that there's a reasonable reading of this as a reference to the expansion of the gospel. In other words, people who were not believers becoming believers. And that is fruit, isn't it? That the gospel is bearing fruit in terms of people being added to the church. And that's obviously there in the text. But it's not only the extensive growth, it's the intensive growth. And by that I mean this. I mean that fruit, the very nature of the illustration of fruit suggests that there's a tree on which first there's a little bud, and then the bud begins to grow as the sap rises and the sun warms. It's something that matures and develops and continues and expands and gets stronger and sweeter. Yeah?
that in the Christian life, first, perhaps you just think back to your conversion, perhaps some of you, maybe the primary thing on your mind was, how might I be saved? How can God deal with my own situation, my own crisis as I stand before the throne? How can God deal with my sin? And as the gospel has come to you, perhaps you have found just that peace and that confidence towards God, knowing that Christ has borne the penalty of your sin upon his shoulders and you are free. Heaven is your home. And that's a wonderful thing. But as you've become confident in that truth, perhaps you've begun to look up and look around and see what else the gospel does. Maybe it's not just about me and how I've been saved. You begin to see, oh, it's about you and what the Lord has done for you. What the Lord has done for us. And not just us, but others like us. And people in different lands and different cultures and different times. Look at the great things that God has done through the person of Jesus Christ. And your horizons, if I can put it like that, begin to grow. And with that growth of horizon, your faith in God, which was like a little thing, enough to get you yourself into his hands and into his house, your faith begins to grow as you begin to see the great and glorious things, and your confidence in God begins to grow. Is your faith growing? And your love for each other, perhaps initially it was I need to make some friends because I need to fit in and I need to... Maybe it was all very much wrapped around about... Until you perhaps start to think, well, maybe... I wonder if I could serve somebody else. Maybe I can help somebody else. Maybe I can provide a service to your people. People have been marking the passing of Billy Graham. We're not going to do any biographical autopsies today. But he's a person of great influence, of great service. And his love grew, expanded, and hope. How are you more excited now about heaven than you were? Is heaven more appetizing? Is that street more desirous to you? Are you more hungry and thirsty for the time when there will be no more sexual temptations, there'll be no more bills to pay, there'll be no more awkward or difficult relationships to navigate, no painful memories with which you have to accommodate yourself. You will be free. Has that increased in loveliness to you over time? The physical body renewed entirely and glorified. Does that prospect, is it sweeter now than it was? I suppose what I'm trying to say is that the Colossians, that's growing, these things are growing. And it is normal that it would be growing in us. Faith, hope, and love. Growing like fruit on the tree planted in the gospel. Jesus said something about Christians and other people, actually. He made just a very astute observation about all of us. He said, by their fruits, you'll know them. How do people know you're a Christian? How do people know this is really a church? Isn't it that there is a lively faith? A growing love, a real and genuine love, and a hope and excitement about the consummation of all things. Aren't these the marks? Aren't these fruits that proceed from the gospel? Well, I know that this faith, hope, and love is not the kind of faith, hope, and love that the world talks about. This is gospel faith, gospel hope, gospel love that's being referred to. That's how we know we're Christians, how we know this is a church, by this fruit that's been born by the gospel. So here's the question.
How's your faith? How is your faith? How's your faith in God? Are you confident in God? Do you trust him? Does your trust grow? Is it growing and maturing? Is it in theory or really growing? Because it's easy to, you can fool some of the people some of the time, you can pass it off, you can fool the pastor, but you can never fool God. Is your faith growing? How about your love? How's your love for the saints? And yes, that includes you. If you're a saint today, do you love yourself? Do you love the other saints around you? How's your love? Is it growing? Are you growing in appreciation for what Christ has done for the people around you and loving and serving them ever increasingly, because you know you're going to meet the King, you're going to heaven, and it is so exciting, and that is a day of great anticipation and joy. Your hope, is it invested in heaven? Or have you got plan B? Well, keeping up with Colossians is my first point, means bearing good gospel fruit. Bearing good gospel fruit. So I suppose sometimes, I mean, the church I used to go to, they always used to get us to say things out loud. Do you ever do that in some church? They always get, now say this after me. Don't do it very often. I need to bear good gospel fruit. Do you think you can manage that? I need to bear good gospel fruit. I need to bear gospel fruit, right? I need to. Verse 6, notice the fruit is growing. The fruit is growing. And there is nothing static about this fruit. It's not like a constant, there's my faith, there's my love, there's my hope. Like that. You know, if you see that on an ECG scanner, you get worried, right? We want to see a bit of this going on, right? We want to see some life in our faith. Some life in our love. Lively. A lively hope. Yes? Seems reasonable, doesn't it, from what we're reading here? Growing love, growing faith, growing hope. Because if it's not growing, here's an opportunity. If it isn't growing, here's an opportunity for us. We can do troubleshooting. I never knew what a troubleshooter was. I thought it was somebody who went around with a holster. And then I got this job and I had to fix machines at one point, and I had to work out where in the system there was a problem. I had to take the machine apart and find the problem, then put it back together again and all the rest of it. Troubleshooting. Going through stage by stage and finding where the snag is. Where's the snag? If faith, hope and love is not growing in it, where is the snag? What's the problem, people? Why? Let's ask the question why. Let's see if we can work out. And it must be because the connection, there's a loose connection between your heart and the gospel. If these things are produced by the gospel and they're not being produced in your heart and your life, there must be a loose connection somewhere between the gospel and your heart, right? That makes sense, doesn't it? And how do we access the gospel? In verse 5, we remember that of this you have heard before the word, through the word of truth, the gospel. One way we can lose touch with the gospel is because we're no longer in the word. We're not in it. We're not reading. We're not listening. Because we lose touch with it, not surprisingly, if that is the source, not surprisingly, we're not producing the fruit. Okay, so maybe if you're concerned that you're not bearing the fruit that you should do or want to, maybe it's because you need to spend more time in the word. Very simple, all right? Second to that, verse 6, we see that which came to you as indeed the whole world, as at the end of the verse there, as you heard of it and understood. Maybe you're in the word, but truth is you don't understand it. Your understanding has been warped or has been confused.
You've got confused, you've got bogged down somewhere. Maybe you've found yourself off in that legalistic track, or maybe you've got yourself bogged down in an introspective track or something like that. But somehow your grip on the gospel and how and your understanding of it has got loose. So that's something you can check and just say, maybe I don't understand this. Maybe I need to go and talk to somebody and talk it out. And specifically when he mentions about understanding there at the end of verse 6, understood the grace of God. Maybe that's what I'll be going back to the legalism bit. Maybe the problem is you understand the gospel, but you've got this slightly warped. Just make sure when you're reading your Bible, when you're considering the gospel, that the message you're receiving is the message of grace. If you're hearing the message of grace, your connection is good. Right? If you're getting something else, just think, hang on a minute. I need to retrace my step. There's a problem here. Grace is at the heart of the gospel message. So there are some possibilities for the sort of things that could be inhibiting fruit in your life. But here's the other thing, and this is the thing that's faced the Colossians are facing specifically. Things happen in life. Do mine. And the things that happen sometimes can exercise you to your limits. You can get pushed into the deep end when you can't swim. Now, the people at Colossae are experiencing something they hadn't experienced before. They seem to be experiencing persecution. Epaphras, their minister, has been arrested. He's in Rome, 1,000 miles away. The man who at that time was their principal source of understanding and gospel and so on and so forth has been taken from them. They're in a hard place. Paul, that great man striding across Europe with the gospel, is in prison. It looks like the movement is beginning to be wrapped up by the authorities and snuffed out. So at times like that, now maybe that's not the problem you're facing. Maybe the problem you're facing is something like, I've got to be at work at 9 o'clock and my car won't start. Maybe your problem is, I just can't seem to make myself understood by somebody who I have much to do with on a daily basis. I don't know what the problems each of us have. I know some of us, because we talk, don't we? And we know stuff, but I'm just saying generally, all sorts of problems besiege us. This was besieging them. And he's writing to them about fruit because he knows that the time of pressure, when we're under pressure, can be the time when our fruit, our confidence in God shrinks back. Why, God? Why have you allowed this? Why me? And our tentacles of faith, those tender shoots of our souls, which reach out to God in faith, begin to withdraw behind our own skeleton shell. And the people that we're amongst, we withdraw from the people who we're amongst. Our love for them begins, well, you know what they did? Do you see the way they looked at me? I can't believe the way they act. And the tentacles begin to withdraw. And your sense of hope and the future becomes more dismal, and your horizons narrow in, and you become more isolated and enclosed within yourself. You become more selfish. Because you're suffering, and you're protecting yourself, and something like that is at least threatening these people. And so the fruit that your tree starts to bear, instead of these good fruits, faith, hope, and love, well, you can name it. What kind of things start to be manifest? Bitterness, anger, resentment,
hostility, impatience. Right?
Yeah. And Paul, look at verse 7. Paul knows they're going through a hard time. They know they're good Christians. He knows they love the Lord.
But he is praying with all of his might for them that at the time when the pressure is coming on, that their grip on the gospel won't falter. Because that is exactly what the devil would like to achieve. Cut you off from the source. That's a military strategy, isn't it? You stop them from getting to the water supply. Starve them out. Break your connection with the gospel. He's praying for them. He's praying, isn't he?
Because even in their trials, his prayer, instead of them becoming all prickly and cold and retreating,
in their trials, their faith will carry on developing and their fruit will continue to grow. That's what we see in verse 10, isn't it? As we go down to verse 10. In every good work, increasing in the knowledge.
In the hard times,
in the good times, fruit. Gospel fruit. What's that fruit? Faith, hope, love through it all. It's great to have faith, hope, and love in the good times, isn't it? To bear fruit in the good times. What is the most precious fruit? It's the most precious fruit. It's the fruit that grows in the hard times. Isn't it? Isn't then that when the premium is paid on your faith? When that those acts of love and service are most precious? When that hope is worship to the living God and ascends like an aroma before his throne? When the pressure is on, when you're under trial, being patient and strong and joyful, when all is well with you. It's wonderful.
Being patient and strong and joyful when all is not well with you
glorifies God. It glorifies God. He's talking about living a life that pleases the Lord there, isn't he? Pleasing the Lord. Which most pleases the Lord? Which fruit most pleases the Lord? The fruit that grows in its season or the fruit that grows out of season. When he comes to the tree and it's not even the season, but there's something there for Jesus. Otherwise, don't we have a situation that I don't want to put thoughts or words into Jesus' mouth. He said everything perfectly. But use your imagination for a moment and imagine a relationship in which you've said, I really trust you and I love you and I'm looking forward to spending my whole life with you. And then something happens and you don't answer that person's call anymore. You don't speak to that person anymore. You haven't got a kind word to say about it. Something happens. And now it's, but you did this, and I did this. That's terrible, isn't it? That having begun well, a relationship can sour, can't it? A relationship can sour because of circumstantial things. And I think the danger we all have to face is that when things don't go our way, when the things we want to happen, surely they wanted Epaphras to continue to minister to them, but it wasn't to be. God decreed it otherwise. And in that moment, they didn't get what they wanted, and the danger was that they were going to sulk. Anybody here sulk when they don't get what they want? Comes out in different ways, doesn't it? But it's a sulk. And it's the sulking we learned when we were very little children.
And we're big, big grown-ups now. And it isn't very becoming for a big grown-up to sulk with God, to be in a sulk with God. We fall at the hurdles, don't we? Isn't that the truth, or is it only me? We do well on the flat. We trip at the hurdles. But you know, here's the good thing about that. If we know we trip at the hurdles, we know where the problems lie. We know it's to do with our connection with the gospel. We know it's to do with our hearts. We know where to go to. We know to whom we can turn. We know how to reconnect to the source. Go back to the source. And the fruit will come. The fruit will return. It's that simple, isn't it? It's that simple. There's a lesson to be learned in every failure. All our failures, there's a lesson to be learned. It's good news when we're sulking with God. When we're even angry with God. Even though we probably wouldn't even have the chutzpah to say so. Truth is, even if you can't admit it, everybody else can see. We think we're opaque. We're not. We are transparent people. Transparent people. Thwarted my desires, God. You've come between me and what I want. I'm going to my room. I won't be down for dinner. Just got to remind ourselves of the grace that is expressed in the gospel. Christ died for sinners. He died for you while you were still deep in your sin and transgressions. He's done for you what you could never do. He secured something for you that you could never earn. It's a message of grace, and we have to respond graciously to that message. So it's so easy, I suppose, just finishing off this point, that because as you read in this passage of verse 14, there is forgiveness for sins. Okay, let's say that's us. Let's say you're willing to admit that you sulk with God, you get cross with God. Let's say you admit that you fail to bear fruit when you know, and those times you would most desire that you should, but you don't. You can go to God and there is forgiveness of sins. Is that good news? Great news. It's great news. But don't take advantage of that forgiveness and fail to learn the lessons. Because here it talks about in verse 14 about redemption as well. There's redemption. He can take the failures and the faults and the shortcomings and the weaknesses and even our sins and turn them around and use them for his glory. So take advantage of the forgiveness of sins, but don't forget to learn the lessons to take those things which you've discovered about the lack of connection and use them and repent and go forward and bear more fruit than you did before as a consequence of this experience. Next time, go over the hurdle. Go over the hurdle. Learn and grow. So keeping up with the Colossians, second point. The third one is the shortest. Keeping up with the Colossians means bearing increasing fruit always. So, you ready to say something? The gospel fruit I bear needs to keep growing. Go on, Andy, you're a star. You're always the first, isn't it? Up there. The gospel fruit I bear needs to keep growing. Is this tough? Does this stretch you? I'm stretched. So final point, verse 11. He's praying, isn't he? He's praying for them. He prays that they'll increase in knowledge. So through the trials, of their faith and their love and their hope. They'll actually get to know. You see, knowledge, we often think of knowledge as in data, right? Information. There's a difference between information, knowing stuff about God, that's data, isn't it? And knowledge. And the Bible, when it talks about knowledge, is almost always talking about, you know, and he knew his wife. Intimate experience. This knowledge is about getting to know God better and better, going deeper with God. And he's praying that through these trials, they will actually come through this trial knowing God better than when the whole thing started. They'll actually love God and trust God more at the end than they will at the beginning. Their hope will be brighter. Their love will be more true. Because here's the emphasis on the word. He says about praying about being filled, doesn't he? Being filled in verse 10. He prays that they might be filled. I'm probably getting my reference. I've noticed. Verse 9, thank you. Asking that you may be filled with the knowledge of his will. Why would somebody pray that somebody be filled with something? Because evidently they lacked it. So they've got faith, they've got hope, they've got love, but is it full? Clearly not. He's praying that it would be full, right? Anybody here full of faith, full of hope, and full of love? I wish. But the goal, the aspiration, the prayer is still there, isn't it? That we might be. There are moments, perhaps in time, when you experience something where you do feel more fully full. That doesn't even make sense. More filled than at other times. And that's what he's praying for, isn't he? That they might be filled. Where does filling take place? On the outside where you put your tattoos? I have faith. I have hope. I have love. It's on the inside, isn't it? Me and Andy are having a service together. Faith, hope, and love. It's on the inside. The filling is on the inside. It's on the inside of you. And that's where your reality exists, on the inside. How you really are. Not how you appear. Not what you say. Not how you tell us you are. But the truth of really how much faith you have right now, where you are with God right now, what your feelings and your disposition towards your fellow Christians are, what your aspirations about the future are, the reality of these things. And he knows there is need, they need more than they have. And it goes on, doesn't it? He prayed that it would be filled with the knowledge of his will. How many completely understand the will of God? And in all spiritual wisdom, have you got all spiritual wisdom on the will of God concerning your life and the life of the world? Do you understand it perfectly? Verse 10, he's praying that they might continue to move in that direction. You know, your understanding can and will grow. Maybe there's things you don't understand right now. You can understand them. There are things you don't know what to do about. God will show you and help you to know what to do. There's things you don't know. And if you go to him, he will show you those things that you need to know. He's praying for them, isn't he? That they might be filled in a better place than they presently are. Not on the outside, on the inside. So here's the question. And sometimes we can't even answer this because we don't even know our own hearts. But where am I actually at? Where are you actually at? How are you doing? Honestly. Do you need to talk to somebody? Do you need somebody to pray with you? Pray for you? Are you aware of a lack
and you want that lack to be filled in your heart.
I'm sure that if you went to the church at Colossae with all this faith and hope and love that was present there, that would be a safe and a good place to talk to somebody and to have somebody pray with you. Okay, Epaphras can't be there. Paul can't be there. There's a letter to read, perhaps. But in the end, these people are the people who God has put around you, and there'll be enough there. We can talk. We can pray together. That probably isn't true at Corinth.
And we need to be realistic and say, where are we at as a church in terms of being a place where there is faith, hope, and love that people who are hurting and want to grow and want to mature and going through a tough time can turn to one another and sit down with each other and talk about these things and have time to pray and to mature, because we don't want to just stay where we are in our little selfish, hurting bubble. We want to break out. We want to grow for Jesus. You know, it's these conversations, they can be the conversations about our circumstances, can't they? We can say, I'm going through this problem. Like, you know, I have to have an operation. I've had a diagnosis and I have to have an operation. That's a circumstantial thing. And that is important to talk about our circumstances. But really, the real conversation is about, how is this situation affecting my relationship with God? This situation I'm passing through now is, I am struggling with God about this, for example, or I don't understand how the gospel applies to this situation here. Could you help me? Could you pray with me? Because I feel like I'm not bearing fruit in this, and I want to bear fruit because God is working. That's a good conversation. Can we do that amongst ourselves? Are we keeping up with the Colossians sufficiently to be a place where we can do that? It's a kingdom of light, isn't it, in verse 12, 13. We're going to pick up on these next time, these final verses. But it is a kingdom of light. Light is where things, the truth comes out, where everything is seen, where it's not a place of hiding. It's not a place where you're in the shadows and the half-truth. How are you? I'm fine. And I know there's a time for saying I'm fine when you're going out the door. I understand that. But there's also another time, the right people, we do much more than that. The kingdom of light, the safe place, the kingdom of God's beloved Son. And you are in Him. You are safe in Christ. Out of that, you can come out of the darkness and come out into the light where you can be seen. Isn't it funny, isn't it? The blind don't believe for a minute that they're invisible, do they? And yet somehow when we're in darkness, we think nobody can nobody notices, nobody can see the change in our disposition, the way we act, the way we slip away, the way we don't engage, as if we're kind of cloaked in darkness. Zorro. You're only kidding yourself. Maybe you can see a bit. Maybe you can see a bit. Maybe you can see there are issues and you want to talk about it and you want to take this stuff forwards. Well, that's an answer to somebody's prayer. Somebody's been praying for you because they want you to be more fully filled than they can see you presently are. Because there's joy on offer, isn't there? Do you remember the last time you felt joy? Good thing, isn't it? It's on offer in the gospel. There's joy in the gospel. And we mentioned about redemption. So just don't settle for falling at the hurdle and sitting there going, my knee hurts. Get fruity. Let's grow some fruit. Keeping up with the Colossians means receiving the help we need, doesn't it? And I need help with my sense of humour, evidently, obviously.
amongst other things. Keeping up with Colossians means receiving the help we need, coming humbly. We're not full. We're not the finished article. It's okay. It's okay. Your belonging is not predicated on you being filled. Your belonging is predicated on Christ. And in him you're safe and secure. So what are we going to say? I need help if I'm going to bear growing gospel fruit. That's a bit of a mouthful, isn't it? I need help if I'm going to bear growing gospel fruit. Okay, let's sing something. Let's sing.